Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology. We learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining with us today. Let's get started. Did you know that on jamesmillerlifeology.com, you can enroll in the academy I created for listeners just like you? I've created courses you may take at your own pace, which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Enroll in one of the classes today. I have a great show for you today. I'm going to help you overcome childhood stigmas. I'll also be interviewing Anjana Karamathel, who shares her story of how she overcame her childhood stigmas in India and created multiple educational opportunities for many underprivileged children. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but some of you may not yet know me as a composer. I currently have two albums which have been released. Think of both albums like books. Each composition is written like a chapter in a book. The first album, Consolation, explores a character's grief and loss. And just like in any book, the story explores a character's heartache, and eventually he finds healing and hope. The second album, Restoration, explores a character's personal development. He has an awakening, and in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which aren't healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, being restored to something greater than before. You may purchase both albums on iTunes or any other digital music store. The names of the albums are Consolation and Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you're currently hearing is from the second album, Restoration, entitled Determination. Ignoring childhood stigmas. When we're younger, our self-esteem is often measured by the environments in which we grew up. Often our parents will tell us certain things about the type of person we could become. And then when we're in school, of course, our teachers will tell us the same thing based off of our grades or even your social group at that time. And as we grow up, all these different lessons or what we're told formulates the person that we become. One of the most difficult things is if we're often told as a child that we'll never amount to anything, or maybe even our family system, maybe even put us in the role of the black sheep or the type of person who is just not going to succeed. As we grow up, that then becomes what we tell ourselves. That becomes a template of how our thoughts are created. For example, if I have a dream that I want to have my own business, well, if all of a sudden I think of, and maybe not even consciously, I think of the things that were told to me. James, you would never amount to anything. Or James, you're not smart. Or you're not good with your money. If that were the case, well, then it'd be very difficult for me to be successful or even try to attempt the dream that I have, because what I was told as a child multiple times, maybe in different ways, that I wasn't good enough, well, therefore I wouldn't try it. One of the hardest things to do is to really stop and reflect on what was your childhood like? What were the stigmas that were put on you? And some people may not experience this, but I know so many people who've gone through their life who continually replay this childhood template and never fulfill their dreams. So as you reflect on that today, maybe even in this moment, ask yourself, what was told to me when I was growing up? And if you kind of struggle with that, one way to actually do that is when you mess up and you maybe do something that you're not proud of or you're ashamed of, what is the self-talk you create for yourself? For example, if I say, James, you're so stupid, or what is wrong with you? Always do this. If my negative self-talk usually says the same phrase over and over again, that's usually what I was told as a child. And that is then manifested in the adult version every time you do something you're not proud of. And then when you're not proud of something, then you internalize that even more, that what you believed when you were a kid was really the truth. You then added your own version of that self-doubt and made it even stronger. It's my goal today to have you really reflect on what childhood stigmas were placed on you. Because if there's something that's telling you that you can't fulfill your highest dreams or cannot overcome any of your obstacles or limitations, then my friend, those stigmas are lies. You get to decide who you're going to be. You get to decide how successful you're going to be. And I'm confident that today will be the day of liberation for you, that you'll realize that you can become anything and anyone you want to be. A quick example of one of the courses you'll find in the Academy entitled Spirit, Mind, Body, The Perfect Triad. This non-religious course helps you understand how your intuition, or rather your gut, your logic, and your body all work together to help you overcome any obstacle you may face. Enroll in the class today. My guest today is Anjana Karamathel. She is going to share her story of overcoming many of life's obstacles in India and how she is now a global champion for individuals in similar situations. Welcome to my show, Anjana.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Now, I do have to apologize to you and to the world up front that I clearly butchered your name, so I want to apologize for that up front.
That's perfectly fine. That's no problem.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. You know, I think it's really interesting and really relevant. There's so many cultures throughout the world, and there's so many beautiful things about many cultures, but there's also, just like on every side to any situation, there's always some areas in which cultures can grow. But I think your particular story is very relevant because education is one of the most prominent things that we all can, that links us together in many different ways. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about your life and your story and the things that you're doing to help bolster people's educational needs.
Sure. I guess, James, I'm slightly different from the kind of people you typically have on your show.
Uh-huh.
The fact that I come from a different culture and that I'm not really an entrepreneur. I'm just a normal corporate employee, a cog in the corporate wheel. I was born in a lower middle class family in South India, in a very rural village setting. This is great in the sense that people are generally, in this part of the world, are generally very, it's a very collectivist society. People care about each other. It's a very religious kind of place. So people actually set aside time to pray every day. This is really the good part. But everything else about this society, it was not really conducive to a girl of ambition like me.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, for example, the access to education and opportunities was quite limited. This was, of course, I was born in the pre-internet age. So the only access I had to the world outside my village was books. And even access to books was rather limited.
Sure.
What made it even more challenging was the fact that people, in as much as it looked like a society that lived in the 21st century, the mindsets were very, very old, were very archaic, outdated. So in essence, there's always a gender difference, this feeling of the male superiority and that the female is a second-class citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Over and above that, what made it difficult was the fact that my parents were separated and I was brought up by my mother and her family. Now, this is a society that believes that the fundamental, it believed at the time, and it continues to believe, that the fundamental purpose of a woman's existence is to get married and have children and stay married.
Mm.
So a divorce in this part of the world is rather unheard of.
Sure.
It is unheard of even today. So you can imagine the stigma some 30 plus years ago.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Yes. And so we were not really well off from a financial standpoint. So as it is, my mother was viewed as someone who failed in her life. And I was the fatherless child, that to a girl, who obviously didn't get a great head start. So there was a lot of social stigma associated with her being who she is. And so she had to take up a job to take care of me and everybody else in the family and to educate me. So that was one part of it. And the other part of it was what I had to undergo in school and in my day-to-day life because I was so-called a fatherless child.
Wow. Well, I want to, first off, thank you so much for just your story. I mean, I can already tell how inspiring it's going to be because just like any movie, you know, you have the backstory and then you know, the climax of all the different amazing things you're doing. So I want to tell my listeners as well that Anjana is actually calling from India right now. So it's definitely a pleasure to have her be here today. But I wanted to go back and ask you some of the questions. So first off, your mom sounds absolutely amazing. She sounds like a very powerful, wonderful woman, regardless of the stigma that the culture put on her, to be able to provide for you and to really encourage you with your education. I just want to really applaud her that you had such a strong woman in your life.
Absolutely. I would not be half the person I am today if she hadn't made the effort to educate me to where I am today and to influence the way I thought about life.
Yes.
So God didn't give me quite two parents, but the one he did give me was more than two.
That's amazing. I'm really happy to hear that. How was your self-esteem as you were considered, I suppose, one of the fatherless child in your village? What was your self-esteem like as you went just throughout your normal day?
It was at an all-time low, no doubt. Just going to school and coming back was a challenge because there was a lot of bullying going on. There was a lot of name calling, ETC, and a whole host of these small but annoying and persistently annoying things that kind of make it difficult for a young child to study.
Sure.
Now, when I look back at those days, I can laugh about it now, but I actually took self-defense classes.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because it was not easy being me.
Sure.
What made it more difficult was the fact that I was good at studies. Mm-hmm. The fact that I scored well in school made a lot of my peers somewhat jealous and somewhat irritated with my presence. So they did everything possible to bring me down. And in India, we have this saying, I don't know if you're familiar with it, we call it the Indian frog mentality, the Indian crab mentality. If you put a lot of crabs in a bowl and one crab tries to crawl out of the bowl, the other crabs will pull it down. That's the general Indian mentality on if somebody really strives to do something in an excellent way. It is not an environment that gives them the impetus to go further. It is an environment that pulls them down. So it becomes really hard to stand out.
Yeah, we actually have something similar to that about monkeys, and I'll probably do an analogy of that in a lesson in the earlier segments. So that's interesting. But it does make sense. I mean, it really does. If someone does try and change their life or tries to become something different, yes, and the world around them is going to pull them down.
Yes, yes. So it was there. The stigma was there. And there was also the disappointment of not having the father figure. For example, if there were important occasions in school or if I needed to make a career decision or an educational decision, there was really nobody that could advise me, that had the world view on what I should do. So it was certainly a disappointment, but one that I eventually learned to cope with.
Yeah. And then you went off to university, correct?
Yes.
And what was it that drew you to university itself?
I think the primary thing was I think the one thing that this entire my childhood influenced me to do was to make my life mean something. And for that, it was important that I go to a big brand name university and get for myself the best education that I could. Because it was just the only tool that was accessible to me at that point, it was my books. And I decided that I would go to do it. So the way it works in India, the mindset is a little different from how it works in say, the United States. In India, if you're good at math and physics, then engineering is an obvious choice for you. And if you're no good at math and physics, and if you're better at the sciences, then it is medicine. And if you're not in the sciences or mathematics at all, then you're generally deemed a failure. No matter what you study, there is nothing much going to happen.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of pressure. Wow.
So getting into a good engineering college is a tough task. And the examination, there's a national level entrance examination. People struggle and write the examination like their life depends on it, because it does.
Wow.
Anyway, so I managed to get into the top engineering college in the state because I was good at math and physics and I hated science. And I chose electrical engineering because that seemed to be something I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So the driving force for me really, James, was not the electrical engineering that I studied. It was the fact that getting into a big brand name institute in India has much value in the job market, irrespective of what you say. So the fact that I was in a prestigious place opened a lot of doors for me before my degree was complete.
Which then also removes the stigma from what maybe people in your village thought about you as a fatherless child. So now you have a different value system based off of the school that you're in.
Absolutely. So now I didn't know it at the time, but I think I was kind of showing people a way out of the mess. Mm. That, you know, if you're born into a difficult situation, you can really use education. And I don't mean like purely a school brick and mortar kind of education, but the whole idea of expanding your worldview and being willing to read as much as you can and imbibe as much as you can. And that will really open the door to many opportunities.
Well, let's talk more about that. Sure, because like you said, there is a traditional brick and mortar. In other words, you're actually in school. Some people go to university after secondary school. But for you, it sounds as if there's many different formats of what education could be like.
Yes. I think my view of education has morphed over the years. Like I just told you, I went to this particular engineering school because it was the number one school in the state. And that was really all that mattered at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated and I found a job in a software company, and it was just the company I wanted and all of that. Now, what happened to my life was that I began to do software engineering, and then I began to travel the world. Now, traveling the world was really the important part of it, because going to a new country was like reading 1,000 books in one day.
I know that feeling, sure.
Yes. And so what that really helped me do was that was my real education. It kind of completely broadened my worldview on what is possible. And I have now gone from the whole brick and mortar idea. I think I have evolved that, and I think education in school is still important. But I also now believe that in different countries, say for example like the US, the cost of education is quite prohibitive, and so it may not be accessible to everyone. The whole idea of education is to broaden the mind.
Yes.
And so long as you're ready to broaden the mind, whether it's in a school or whether it's in a library, it really doesn't matter. If you broaden your mind, that's when you know you're educated, and that's when you understand what opportunities are available to you.
Well, I totally agree with that. You know, one thing I had the fortune of doing a study abroad program in my undergrad. And I truly agree with you. You know, the way I grew up in some ways was very rural in some parts. I grew up in the rural part of Canada, and then I moved all around the United States. But I found for me that when I moved to a different country, actually I moved to Spain. I was there for a year studying abroad. And I found that I thought I had a pretty open mind overall, but just to be a part of another culture, to understand the pride and of the people who live there and how they view their world, and just understanding things in a completely different way or being around something, it just totally, I guess, impacted me in a very profound, powerful way. And I couldn't agree more with you in the sense of, if you can't go to those locations, then studying something by proxy, or in other words, if you just read about it or to really immerse yourself in something that's different or slightly different, whether you agree with it or not, it still allows you to understand the world in a much more expansive way, which helps you be much more relatable, much more understandable within the world or even in the culture in which you currently live.
I absolutely agree.
That's wonderful. Now, after you graduated with your engineering degree, you self-financed your education in London, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, in Scotland.
Oh, Scotland. Okay. That's wonderful.
Yes. So, I worked abroad for a few years prior to my MBA. And so the reason I did that was to kind of earn some money so that I could fund my own education in UK. So nobody in my family has actually studied abroad. And it was therefore a dream for me to go and study abroad and experience the Western way of learning.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes. So I worked for about 8 years, and then I went to do my MBA in Scotland. By the time I was done with my MBA, all my savings was exhausted.
Mm, I'm sure. And then now what? What do you do then? I mean, all your savings is gone, everything you've worked towards.
Yes, it was all gone. But I think the educational experience was absolutely worth it.
Sure.
I would do it again if I could.
So then what happened after that? Because I'm really excited about this particular part, because I have some connections with this as well, which is very interesting.
Yes.
How it works
so
together.
After my MBA, I got a job in Deloitte Consulting in India. And I joined their corporate strategy team, which is cool. I got to travel to New York City and the rest. And that it's after a little bit of organization restructure that I finally moved into learning and development, which is the area that I am really passionate about. Learning and development is fun. It was fun at Deloitte, because what a learning professional does is essentially equipping other working professionals with the skills they need to do their jobs better. It's as simple as that.
Sure.
So at Deloitte, there's a framework for everything. So the for even for the skills people need at different levels, there's a framework. Some of these skills are related to leadership, so that involves direct training by me. Other skills are more technical, so then my job is to get somebody else to come in and teach them. So it's pretty simple. And the reason I liked that job was because it kind of brought back memories of my childhood.
Yes. And I'm sure being able to instill and to teach those people who are budding leaders in their own right, I'm sure that's also just, it just really reinforces how far you've come, what you've done, making it be all worth it, you know, all the ways in which your culture may have treated you. And now on the other side of that you're the expert, you're the one to whom these people come, and you get to teach them. I think it's absolutely wonderful. It's very, very inspiring.
Yes, it's like life came a full circle. I realized that I was at that point where I could give back. I realized that I was doing for others what I had done for myself, and the path I had chosen for myself seemed to work well for me. And so I was equipping other people to do a better job. And so that made a lot of sense to me personally.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Now, there's another part of that as well, which it sounds like the employees of Deloitte also give back to their community or give back to the world in some way. Can you speak more about that?
Yes. So that was, again, in line with my interest in education, and especially education for the girl child. Because part of the reason why, and this is very personal, but part of the reason why my father abandoned our family is because I was a girl and he really didn't want a girl.
Oh my gosh, Anjana, I'm so sorry. That makes no sense to me at all.
Yes, it's something that I have made peace with, and it's something that's very prevalent in India even today. Mm. So having suffered that, I have always looked for ways to bring the girl child forward, to give them the opportunity that I never had. So not in a very argumentative feminist kind of way. I don't believe in making my voice heard in such forums, but in a way that actually makes a small difference to them. Mm-hmm. So this is the project that I started at Deloitte. So at Deloitte, you're right, there's a day when we give back to the community. We call it Impact Day. So one of the projects that I founded, actually, it was Deloitte's first international community project. So what we did was, Deloitte has this fantastic video conferencing facility called the TeleSuite. It is so good that even if you whisper in one of the rooms, people across the world can hear it.
Wow. That's good and bad, I suppose.
Yes. And so people get extremely conscious and they don't really scratch their face and stuff. It's just fantastic technology. Uh-huh. So what I did was I brought a lot of school children into our TeleSuite, and I brought them all in on Impact Day. And over on the other side, and my pilot project was with Chicago, I got some of my peers in Chicago to conduct a live class for them, for these children who were all aged maybe between 13 and 15. These were all girls, and they were from a very underprivileged community, and they spoke English. That was that. Essentially, these my peers from Chicago conducted a live class for them on international marketing and the culture of Chicago and what it really means to get out of their city and what else is available and so on. It was there for about 3 hours or so. In this program, it was not just a classroom mm-hmm. thing. We even had hands-on assignments. So we gave little assignments to these kids. They sat down and did their assignments. They showed their assignment sheet via the teleconference, and somebody sitting in Chicago was actually reviewing their assignment sheet in real time.
I'm sure my listeners right now, as well as myself, I'm in awe of this. It just gives me chills to hear this. I mean, what a beautiful, amazing story. But not only that for yourself, but just to be able to give back to these underprivileged girls who, just to let them know that they have so much more value and worth than maybe what their small rural village may tell them. And I'm sure that was so impactful for them. Do you have any of the, maybe what were some of the reviews that the kids had or the girls had about that time?
I guess they were completely dumbstruck.
I bet.
Initially. These are people, and I consciously selected people who are from families that couldn't afford like holidays or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even the case study that I included within the program had to do with how would you sell pizza to an American?
So this was the real question. I love it.
And fun part of it was that most of these children had never eaten a slice of pizza in their entire life.
Oh, wow.
So when we brought in these slices of pizza and we asked them to eat it and figure out what it was about, uh-huh, and then try and sell this to somebody sitting in America, it was amazing the kind of emotional reaction that I got from that conducting that entire program.
Wow.
Children just could not believe it. They could not believe, and all of them were speaking to a foreigner for the very first time. So they'd never seen anybody with white skin or mm-hmm. black skin. Other skin. They've only used to the brown Indian skin.
Wow.
And with a completely different accent, and all of a sudden, and this infrastructure that we have at Deloitte has no time lag. It really feels like you're sitting with the person on the other side of the table.
Wow. And that's amazing.
Yes. And it was fantastic. These children had the time of their life. This is not what they expected when they showed up. And by the time the session was over, they were hugging me and crying.
Oh,
and
Angela, that's beautiful. That is so beautiful. How was it for you? I mean, as I hear, of course, you tell this story, I just hear the joy in your voice. How was it for you to have all those girls hug you as you just literally changed their life in unimaginable ways?
Yeah, I must say I felt a lot of gratitude for that opportunity. I didn't feel morally superior to them in any way.
Of course.
And this would not have been possible without the support of the people in Chicago who actually came at midnight just like this to the office to conduct a session. It was midnight for them when it is daylight in India.
Mm.
So while the concept and the idea, etc., we had, you know, they came predominantly from me, the execution of it would have failed utterly if it was not for them. So I was glad. I felt like I finally did something meaningful.
Wow. Wow. And I'm sure on so many levels you've done many, many amazing things and many levels. But, you know, specifically this particular example, I'm extremely confident that you literally changed the worldview of these young girls.
I think they kind of started developing an appreciation for the American culture. And more importantly, they started believing that if they're really putting the effort, one day they would be sitting there on the other side of that table.
And I think that's the biggest takeaway. Of course, you know, being exposed to many different cultures, of course, is amazing. But I think just instilling that resilience or that confidence within them, just as a seed growing, you know, in the dark, you know, but it will eventually germinate and become a beautiful thing. And so just to know that you are a part of that, you know, all the people that were part of that particular situation were able to, who knows, maybe change the life of so many people who could then change the life of their world as well.
Absolutely. Yes. And we did that the other way around also. So we went to KIPP Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
KIPP is a school in Chicago, KIPP, KIPP. It's a school in Chicago where children from underprivileged families study. We went to KIPP Chicago and got children from there to use the exact same facility. And we had my colleagues from India sitting here and conducting the session for them.
And that's absolutely amazing. You know, I was telling you in our pre-call that I actually had a patient of mine who was part of that. And I remember she was telling me about this. I was like, I can't remember how long ago it was, but she was telling me about that. She was doing that she was teaching underprivileged children how to read and being a part of that whole I guess, pilot program with Deloitte.
Yes.
And so it's just so interesting how the world kind of links us together that I had heard about this, you know, a while ago, and now I'm actually speaking to the person who developed it. So that's it's just kind of neat how that all works together.
Yes, that's cool, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. Well, Anjana, I know that you did this just to share the world, or just tell my listeners as well as myself, just the amazing things that, you know, someone came from one particular life, who had certain life opportunities, and then you were able to just literally change your world. So I want my listeners to really be to have this beautiful takeaway that I have as well, that regardless of where you are in life, there's always something beautiful on the other side of it. And so thank you. I really want to thank you for being a guest on my show today.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, I know that you are not, you know, you don't necessarily have a website per se, but if my listeners would like to find out more information about you, where would they be able to find your information online?
I have a very active presence on LinkedIn. Your listeners who want to connect with me should just search my name on LinkedIn and I will spell it out. That's A-N-J-A-N-A, Anjana, and K-A-R-U-M-A-T-H-I-L. And Anjana Karumathil. If you search for my name, my profile will pop up, and please send me a connection request, and I'd be happy to speak further.
Wonderful. Anjana, thank you once again for being a guest on my show today.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you for having me, James. It was wonderful speaking to you.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with us today. Please subscribe to this radio show through whichever portal you joined with us today. Also, please visit my website, where you may enroll in Lifeology Academy, read my published articles, and watch all my YouTube episodes I created just for you. If you would like to become a show sponsor or become a guest, please visit jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for your support, and I'll talk to you soon.